Welcome to this podcast episode from the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography, published by Oxford University Press. This episode tells the story of the actress Audrey Hepburn, whose best-known films include Roman Holiday and Breakfast at Tiffany's. Having listened to this life, why not visit the dictionary online? The complete Oxford DNB includes the stories of 58,000 people from the Romans to the 21st century. Further details are available at oxforddnb.com. Audrey Hepburn, 1929 to 1993, film actress, written by Alexander Walker. Audrey Hepburn was born Audrey Kathleen Hepburn Ruston on the 4th of May 1929 at 48 Rue Kéenvelde, Ixelles, Brussels, the only child of Joseph Ruston, one-time honorary British consul in the Dutch East Indies, and his second wife, the Dutch-born Baroness Ella van Heemstra. Audrey's father, a British subject born in Austria, adopted the name Hepburn for its aristocratic resonance. He was descended from Hepburns on his grandmother's side. His marriage began to fail from 1935 when the family moved to Belgium, owing to Ruston's infidelities and adventurer temperament. An active supporter of Léon de Grel's Nazi party, Ruston settled in London following his divorce, where his fascist activities caught the attention of the British security services. Audrey was thus brought up largely by her mother. She was educated in Arnhem, in the Netherlands, where they moved in 1939, and for periods at a local school in Elham, Kent, where her mother's new romance had taken the family. Caught in the Netherlands by the war, mother and daughter suffered severe privations, despite which Hepburn, at some personal risk, performed minor services for the Dutch resistance as an innocent-looking child courier. During this time, she went by the name Edda, since her mother and grandmother feared that Audrey might attract the suspicion of the German occupying forces. Her father had been interned in England in 1939 as a suspected enemy agent. He spent the war years in a detention camp on the Isle of Man, and upon release in May 1945, went to the Irish Republic. Hepburn did not see her father, or even learn his whereabouts, for nearly 20 years. Her emotional and physical traumas, plus the ingrained optimism of her mother's Christian Science faith, had a positive effect on the child, rather than the reverse, contributing to a lifelong practical concern for those less fortunate than herself. In childhood, Hepburn had shown an aptitude in ballet lessons, maintained with difficulty under the German occupation, which helps explain the grace of movement and natural serenity that distinguished her film stardom. Her career in waiting was hinted at just before mother and daughter left the Netherlands for London. Then, aged 18, she secured a role as an air stewardess in a tourist film, Dutch in Seven Lessons, produced for the Dutch airline KLM. Her charming smile was the first of many on screen. In London, she was accepted into the Ballet Rambert, but her self-critical sense told her she lacked the precision, and possibly the physique, to succeed in that art. After trying other short-term outlets, as a fashion model and as a travel clerk, Hepburn was hired for the chorus line of Jack Hilton's musical High Button Shoes. Her radiant personality also won her minor roles in several British films, including the 1951 Ealing comedy The Lavender Hill Mob. Though these were somewhat decorative parts, Hepburn's photographic charm earned her a three-year contract at £12 a week with a major studio, Associated British Picture Corporation. Ironically, she never made a film for her employers. Nonetheless, they profited throughout Hepburn's career from lucrative loanouts for roles in other films, British and American, the first of which was The Secret People, 1952, a political thriller set in London. Her vivacity as a young dancer ensnared in a bomb plot showed her to advantage. She stays alert even when doing nothing, poised like a bird ready to fly from its branch. While making her next film, an Anglo-French comedy entitled Monte Carlo Baby, Hepburn was spotted by Colette, the French author, who was then seeking an actress suitable to play Gigi in the non-musical adaptation of her autobiographical novel on Broadway. Hepburn was borrowed from Associated British, but before the play opened in 1951, she was also screen-tested by Paramount for William Wyler's romantic comedy Roman Holiday, which was to be filmed immediately after Gigi had ended its successful run. In Roman Holiday, Hepburn played a princess who discovers the simple joys of living like ordinary people while incognito and in the company of Gregory Peck's newspaper man. For her performance, Hepburn won an Oscar in 1953 for Best Actress, her only such award from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. It was also the role that defined Hepburn's personality and talents for the rest of her life. Innocence and good sense, wide-eyed eagerness for life, a gift for happiness, a vulnerability that invited protection, but also an air of natural independence. Her liberated princess had her hair cut by a barber in the film, and the androgynous gamine style was set as the Hepburn look for a generation or more of female filmgoers. An even bolder visual signature was her encounter in 1953 with the French couturier Hubert de Givenchy, who had been engaged to design some of her dresses for her next film, Billy Wilder's modern Cinderella story, Sabrina, 1954. Givenchy's minimalist simplicity conferred a timeless elegance on the film star, on and off screen. Since December 1951, Hepburn had been engaged to the British industrialist James Hansen. But about this time, the relationship was broken off due to the demands of her growing fame. She appeared on the cover of Time's 7th of September 1953 issue, even before Roman Holiday had opened in America, a rare tribute. It was while starring in her next stage venture, Jean Giraudoux's medieval fable Ondine, that Hepburn met the American actor Mel Ferrer. The couple were married in a civil ceremony in September 1954, with a church wedding in Burgenstock, Switzerland, on the following day. The marriage produced one son, Sean, who was born in 1960. Mel Ferrer is usually credited with using his knowledge of the film industry, and particularly its bargaining politics, to shape Hepburn's career and to considerably enhance her fees. For her role in Sabrina, she had received only $15,000. For her next film, War and Peace, she received at least $350,000. Cast as Tolstoy's heroine, she excelled as the young, exuberant Natasha, but had not quite acquired the maturity to personify the post-Napoleonic survivor. Funny Face, a 1957 musical with Fred Astaire, showed her again as the youthful innocent on which she now almost owned the screen patent. Then came another comedy, Love in the Afternoon, which made a cheekily Wilder-esque virtue of the 30-year age gap between her truant girl and Gary Cooper's amorous millionaire. Hepburn's gifts responded to the coaching of directors such as William Wyler and Billy Wilder, who shared her own European inheritance and tastes. Though she worked mostly in American films, she never belonged to the Hollywood system and spent the periods between films in domestic seclusion in Europe. She and Mel Ferrer had settled in Switzerland, where a discreet mode of living was more to her taste than cosmopolitan lifestyles, though it did little to develop her husband's own film career. Following Fred Zinnemann's The Nun Story, 1959, came what was perhaps Hepburn's most popular film. This was Blake Edwards' Breakfast at Tiffany's, released in 1961, in which she plays Holly Golightly, the upscale call girl in Truman Capote's Metropolitan Fairy Tale. The film's opening shot, in which Hepburn wanders up Fifth Avenue at dawn, a sophisticated apparition wearing pearls and a black Givenchy dress, has become one of the great images of modern cinema. The film easily competed in her fans' affections with the prestigious title role in My Fair Lady, 1964, opposite Rex Harrison, for which she received a $1 million fee. Here she gave a precise but not transcendent rendering of George Bernard Shaw's heroine, the flower girl Eliza Doolittle, who learns to be a lady by speaking proper. In part, her performance suffered a slight loss of spontaneity by being partially dubbed by a professional singer, Marnie Nixon. Thereafter, Hepburn faced the difficulty of finding suitable mature female roles. It was a situation compounded by her collapsing marriage, which was dissolved amicably in 1968. In January of the following year, she married Andrea Dotti, an Italian psychiatrist, with whom she had a son, Luca. This marriage also ended in divorce in 1982. Though she occasionally returned to the screen, her last appearance was a cameo role as a heavenly angel in Steven Spielberg's Always, 1989. Thereafter, Audrey Hepburn found a second and more emotionally fulfilling career as a special ambassador for UNICEF, the United Nations Humanitarian Mission for Children. She used her celebrity intelligently and unselfishly to draw attention to the need for economic and medical aid in lands ravaged by disease, famine, and civil war. From 1988 onwards, she made more than 50 exhausting and sometimes dangerous field trips for UNICEF to Sudan, El Salvador, Bangladesh, Kenya, and Somalia. Hepburn's considerable efforts may have contributed to the cancer that led to her death on the 20th of January 1993 at her home near Lausanne, Switzerland, where she had lived from the mid-1960s. She was buried on the 24th of January under a simple wooden cross in the village graveyard. Famous, beautiful, talented, and dutiful, Audrey Hepburn continues to stand out not just for her films, but also as one of the relatively few 20th century stars who lived for others besides themselves. Having listened to this life of Audrey Hepburn, why not visit the Oxford DNB online at oxforddnb.com? Here you'll find 150 free podcast episodes, as well as biographies of thousands of interesting people who shaped all aspects of British history.